Doug, who was the drummer that you knew? Was it for Alanis Morissette, or am I thinking of somebody else?
No, I knew Nelly,
what the heck is her name? Iconic wedding songs, like first dance songs.
Anyway, I was friends with her bassist.
Nora Jones.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was close. Nelly, whatever. Nelly Furtado.
No, the drummer I knew was Eddie Money's drummer.
Two Tickets to Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he was like just out of high school, college age, and Eddie Money's drummer quit or got fired or got sick or something. So they're holding auditions, and he showed up and he didn't think like he got the gig, but he totally got it. And I may be conflating stories with how Terry Bozzio got the gig with Frank Zappa on this one, but I think they told him like he was the first drummer that just like read the music and played it. And that's what they want.
He had classical training. He could read the music. Yeah.
Right. But they were leaving on an international tour the next day. So it's like, okay, you're hired.
Do you have a passport?
Right.
That's crazy.
He had to make the decision that night. And he was like, Mom, what do I do? You know, kind of thing.
Mom was like, go.
And the first concert, he screwed up like pretty good. Like he made a really bad mistake in one of the songs. And I guess Eddie Money was known for being just hard line. Like you screw up, you're fired. He had a temper. He had like no room for error, no grace whatsoever. And so he's like freaking out. And Eddie came up to him and he's just like, you're nervous, huh? Yeah. That's not going to happen again. Welcome to tour. Basically, like, that's your pass. I get it.
Yeah.
But that's never going to happen again.
Wow.
Well, it's 8 o'clock.
Oh, look at that.
You timed that up perfectly.
If I was running this show, we would have started already. Ethan's back and things are off the rails.
Yeah, sorry. Then we got to wait a little bit. This is when we actually have to do the pre-show banters right now. What do you want to talk about?
And then Eddie Money said, don't let it happen again.
Don't let it happen again.
And then Eddie Money said, don't let it happen again.
Hey, what a guy.
And then Eddie Money's money. I can't even say. Oh, Eddie Money said, don't let it happen again.
Yeah, we're live.
Welcome back to Switchcast. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, and Switchcast is the automotive-related podcast where we're searching for the truth and the humor in the car industry. It's automotive wisdom with a side of sarcasm, or vice versa, depending on our weekly snark level. With me this week is another return guest and one who will be familiar to many of you, and if he isn't, he will be within the next hour. That's right. Jay Roberts, also known as Gonzo Prius, is with me here. He is the nonstop Cannonball record holder. For those who don't know what that means, it means he didn't stop for gas. That's right. He went the whole way on one tank. Well, three tanks, but
four,
there were
but four. Close enough.
Who's counting? They were all in the car with him. They were his passengers. They were his family. And he never stopped at a gas station. So that is a noteworthy accolade. Recently, he has completed a couple of things, but the most notable is that he did the semi-autonomous. Is that the technical
term? That's the
correct
term.
The correct term is the semi-autonomous Cannonball record. Now, what in the world is that? How do we define that? Well, that's a good question. It's both by time and percentage of autonomy. And that's something we'll dig into a little bit more as we get going. So welcome, Jay. Good to have you back.
Good to be back, Doug. Three-peat.
Three-peat. That's right. Well, we got to do a shot of Malort now. That's the thing for returning guests.
Dang it, bring it, Doug. I just need to start keeping a bottle here. So we've got it ready to rock.
I also love Jay because Jay does medical delivery services and just pretty much drives everywhere. Do you have a million miles under your belt?
Almost 2 million miles.
Almost 2 million miles. Any accidents?
None that were my fault.
None that were your fault. All right. So anyway, 2 million, almost 2 million safe miles. And he, at the drop of a hat, will go almost anywhere. So I called him 2 days ago, knowing he was coming up for this podcast, and said, hey, we just bought a Porsche Boxster that's 2 hours from you. And of course, we were having trouble getting transporters to come north to Ohio from down south, because if you're watching this in real time, it is May, and all the snowbirds, or our grandparents, are all coming up from Del Boca Vista, Playa Ray Beach, Florida, to, you know, the cold north, and they're shipping all their Mercedes and Jaguar convertibles up with them, so you can't get any trucks. So I said, hey, Jay, can you come get this car? I'll overnight you a dealer plate, and you can drive it up here. And he said,
yes.
Yep. I told him not to break any records on the way.
I tried not to. I mean, it was tempting. It was a beautiful, beautiful car.
It wasn't an S, though. It's just a base. You couldn't really go that fast. Anyway, before we get into your latest record, let's talk about a little bit of news.
Yeah.
Got to give the people what they want. this week, Car and Driver posted an article entitled, quote, "Car companies have interesting ways of catering to aging drivers." The subtitle, "America has never been grayer or more active. How are car companies adapting?" I didn't read the article. Not one word. The cover photo for the article featured the exact convertible that I bought for my wife.
Oh, my.
Oh, boy.
As much as I wanted to be offended, I was simultaneously excited because it appeared to be cardinal red, which is an incredibly rare color for Mercedes, a burgundy color that I tried to find for her but couldn't. So anyway,
Well, we both have some wise stories to share tonight. Then that's a rough one, Doug. I don't know if I can improve on that any. Stay tuned.
I appreciate though. So she wanted certain things in a convertible that her previous E36 M3 didn't have or was bad at or whatever. But
was when, like working one of those things?
Yes, working a working top and a good head gasket was one of those things. Bluetooth and air-conditioned seats were really the two big things. But she has lamented multiple times that the E350 is not as fun to drive as the E36.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
You are just like, she is becoming a little bit of a car person by accident, I think.
She doesn't know, really, and she doesn't really care. She just has slight preferences. Like, she would like an Audi R8 Spider. But then I tell her that it's like 80, 90 grand to get a decent one. She's like, oh, no, I don't want that.
She's too practical.
Right. Right. and I would want to get her a stick shift because. Anyway, or a second gen. So it's at least the double clutch transmission, not the single clutch, because that's just abysmal. And she has driven. She's driven a BMW SMG, I think it was. But it was one of the single clutch automated manual ones. And she complained about how bad it was. She's like, I don't understand what it's doing. Like, it doesn't just go when you tell it to go. Again, she doesn't know, but she knows what's good and what's bad. And she knows
she's got taste
that SMGs are bad. Another article from the Detroit Free Press. Driving stick shift has become a niche craft in America. Sorry, quote unquote. Have to give proper credit here. The author of the article, it did get revised, but this is what she wrote initially. Quote, "Shifting gears, the feel of the clutch underneath your hand."
What?
Mark the experience behind the wheel of a manual transmission car, now a rare breed in the U.S.
Wow. Maybe that's just a really impressive way to
was
drive a stick.
Was she driving a motorcycle?
She's like,
maybe she's talking
sideways.
About a motorcycle clutch.
The feel of the gear shift in your foot is really what does it. That's it just sets this whole thing off.
Yeah. Now, Mark Driscoll and or Hank or somebody like that would say that it's because a woman wrote the article that she doesn't know any better. But
That's those people. I just think that it was the wrong person. Somebody who is not a car person wrote that article. Yeah. So anyway, that's all the news we have because I want to leave plenty of time for Jay Roberts. So Jay, autonomous, semi-autonomous cannonball.
Right.
The previous record was held by Alex Roy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So easy first question. The dirty details. Who, what, when, where, and how?
So, well, I did it in my 2017 Toyota Prius, the same car that did the nonstop run in.
Same car that did the musket ball.
Same car that did the musket ball and the Spanish Trail, Dog Beach to Jacksonville. So it made the, after this, that week of events, it made the fifth run for this car.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So, and
people thought a Prius could never do anything exciting.
No, it still barely can, but I had fun with it.
So, side question here with the autonomy, right? So, are you totally in control or does AI take over and like want to stop at some political protests on the way?
No, it wasn't that bad.
I mean, it is in a Prius.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, it didn't do that. It didn't get mad at people rolling coal or anything like that. It just used a system that's basically it's a DIY self-driving system.
Okay.
It's called comma.ai. And it's a device you mount on your windshield, plugs into the OBD port, and there's about 300 or so cars it'll work with. That car has to have already in place adaptive cruise control and self-lane centering.
Okay.
And this system just adds another level to the adaptive cruise control.
Okay. So it's using sensors and systems already in the vehicle.
Correct.
And it's tuning them.
Basically, and or enhancing them.
Okay. That
would be another way.
Software hack.
Right. And
okay.
So you go on the road, set the cruise control, and you let go of the steering wheel. And it will turn around the curves. It'll slow down for traffic. It'll bring you to a complete and dead stop in traffic, which is mind-numbing the first few times you see it, experience it, but it does fine.
Hmm.
And what does not recognize stop signs or stop lights. So
I feel like that's a pretty big problem.
Well, in the tech world where they're trying to do full self-driving, that is a problem. But in this system, I think it's an advantage because it still requires you to be a driver. It still requires you to pay attention, to be alert, even though the car is maintaining its speed, maintaining the lane without your input. It still requires a driver to be aware that, hey, I need to stop ahead. Hey, I need to take over. I need to slow down. So you can't just set it and
forget it.
Recline a seat back and go to sleep or, you know, read a book or we've all seen the crazy videos.
I want to push back on that a little bit. The requirement to be aware, I feel like it simultaneously requires people to be aware, but it removes their sense of that need to be aware. Like even using cruise control,
yeah.
And I'm sure there are studies that speak to this, but I found myself when I use cruise control, my reaction time when something happens is way slower because my foot isn't on the gas. I have to actually think about like, wait a minute, what's happening? Mm-hmm. Where's my foot? And enter this like manual engagement process or re-engagement process with the car before I can then do something
right
to respond. And that's just with regular cruise control.
Yes. So, you know, what you experience the same, what is it? Yeah, you have to be paying attention. And yeah, there's a little bit more delayed to the human reaction because you're not physically touching the steering wheel. Your foot's not physically on the gas pedal or the brake pedal.
Hmm.
You know, so that will be true. Because even with normal cruise control, there's going to be a delay.
Hmm. Okay, so Toyota Prius, comma.ai, mm-hmm. plug and play,
basically, yeah.
Self-driving system or semi-autonomous, we'll call it. And when did this happen?
Happened April 11th through the 13th, so last month.
Great. Okay, where?
I started from the Good Wives Shopping Center.
Okay, so the Darien,
Connecticut
starting point, right, which is where the 79 Cannonball began.
And there was some strategy to choosing that starting point because I wanted to maximize the amount of time that the car was driving itself. If I started from the Red Ball Garage, it would have been more time, my hands-on, until we got out of Manhattan and through the tunnel.
Because it can't handle the traffic lights.
Right.
Okay.
But starting from the Good Wives, I had, if you know the back shortcut, I had two right turns in half a mile. I was on 95 and let go.
Okay.
You know? So to maximize the percentage of autonomy.
This system would not be good for, like, commuting to work.
It's
long trip.
I use it for commuting all the time, and it does great. It's more comfortable and more effective out on the highway, but around town, it does work wonderfully.
You just have to hit the brake when you see stop signs.
Yes. Now, what's interesting, if there's a car ahead of you slowing down for that stop sign or stoplight, you don't have to do anything. It will follow that car, and it will bring you to a dead and complete stop following that other car.
Does this work on Nissan Altimas?
Oh, gosh, I hope not.
Asking for a friend.
Oh, I hope not.
Actually, not a friend. I don't have any friends that drive Altimas, I don't think.
But, I don't know about Nissan Altimas, but the Toyotas and Lexuses are the top models that it works on right now. Outside of that, I don't know what other models works on. I know that if you go to their website, there's a... It'll give you a list of compatibility that it'll work with.
Hmm.
So the original Lugnuts on YouTube says when they were using cruise control, they hover their foot over the brake pedal, which sometimes I do as well. If I'm in heavy traffic, if the traffic is thickening, right, I'll kind of just be cautious.
Yes.
Were you doing that kind of stuff?
No. Nope.
Were you just entirely, no hovering, no...
Nope.
You were just sitting, just
no,
hanging
he was
out.
Playing words with friends.
Didn't do any of that.
What's the point of hovering your foot over the brake pedal? That's not resting. At that point, you might as well just have your foot on the gas.
Now, I will say this. There was a learning curve to trusting the system. And initially, my hands were hovering around the steering wheel. My foot was hovering on the brake. I was like, what is this thing doing? It was my comfort level, you know. And it really did not take long to realize, hey, I don't have to hold my hands here and wait for it to do something. It's actually going to steer around this curve. It's actually going to slow down for this car or speed up when the car speeds up. It's, you know, but that initial reaction of, yes, you are hovering a little
bit. Mm-hmm. Was that on the run or were you doing testing before you committed to the going?
We did quite a bit of testing.
That's good.
Beforehand, you know, quite a bit of testing.
Okay, so, who? Did you do it solo again, like most of your other runs?
No, this was my first time having a co-driver on this run. Interestingly enough, I had been discussing the previous record holder for the autonomous drive, Alex Roy. And I've been chatting with him, and he asked me twice if I needed a co-driver. I must say that was one of the hardest no's I've ever had to give. I mean, he's the godfather of modern-day cannonballing. A lot of us were inspired by everything he's done. Of course, seen Apex, the movie. And he's asking me if I needed a co-driver. So he lost out to my wife.
That's a good one.
Yes.
Yeah, Cannonball and Chain.
Yep. So did a Cannonball and Chain, and it didn't take much convincing for her, actually.
Really?
Yep.
Because you told her you're driving the speed limit.
Mm-hmm. Because she's doesn't like to go crazy speed. She wasn't, if the car gets above 85, she'd slow down. You know, she doesn't enjoy that. So with this, she's like, sure, I'll do it. We've been together almost 30 years, driven all over the country, all 50 states, lots of trips. So she was the perfect choice for a co-driver.
So speak to that. Well, you could take that quote and say, make a a love analogy, right? You're the perfect choice for my co-driver of life.
You should
put that on a card and give it to her for next anniversary.
I'm sure she's watching now. She's probably weeping and going to say, thank you, Doug.
Hopefully she isn't watching so you can use that again. Or hopefully she has a memory like my wife and you can use it again anyway and she won't remember that I came up with your best line ever. Hi, Gypsy.
But there was a big issue on this run was proving the percentage of autonomy.
So back up a little bit before we get to that. What was the previous record and what does it mean to have an autonomous record run?
Well, the previous record was 55 hours. And it was, they claimed 97.7% autonomous.
Okay.
And that was done in a Tesla in 2016. They also set the EV record on that run.
Okay.
So that EV record's since been lowered to 42 hours.
Yep.
But on that run, they spent almost 14 hours at recharging stations. But the interesting thing...
On the 42-hour run.
On the 55-hour autonomous run. But the interesting thing was the percentage of autonomy that they claimed was estimated.
Okay.
And I actually
asked, all know you can't estimate anything cannonball. You got to have proof.
Proof. And so I asked Alex, you know, how did you estimate that number? And he said it was one of the co-drivers was an engineer, and it was their best guess. Alex said it could be as high as 98%, could be as low as 96%. But there was no definitive, verifiable way to prove it.
Okay. But it was the first run, so there's no standard or basis or whatever.
Right. You know, he laid down a benchmark for everybody else to go after.
Okay. So, all right. So what did beating it mean? Was it going faster or more autonomous or both?
Both.
Switchcast is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio, and they serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with a single purpose, and that is to make people a part of the experience. So if you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy and flexible live streaming platform for organizations. Boxcast is so easy, in fact, that we're broadcasting this show with a phone. So head on over to switchcards.com/boxcast to start your free trial.
All right, we're back, and here with us is Jay Roberts. But before we dig more into Jay Roberts' autonomous record, we, of course, have to bring you the Wall of Shame. Now, the Wall of Shame has taken many different forms. Usually it's making fun of customers who are being ridiculous, kind of the reverse review for, you know, car dealers get reviews. We want to review our customers as well. But this one was just somebody, it was just a braggadocery fail. There was a license plate spotted, a vanity license plate on an R129 Mercedes SL500. For the non-nerds, that's early 90s to early 2000s. So a pretty cheap car, but kind of cool. And the vanity plate was PAYDNFA, cheapers, PAYDNFL. Most people thought that he was a pro football player. They were reading it paid NFL, but it's highly more likely that he's a Dave Ramsey subscriber, e.g. paid in full. However, I looked up the vehicle in Ohio system and found the most recent sale price, and it was a whopping $1,700. Seems like a weird flex bragging that you don't have a car loan on a car that costs less than the average down payment at a buy here, pay here.
Yes. They there's people out there with Altimas that have a whole lot more balance on them than we have.
Yep. So anyway, I thought that was just kind of funny. Like, if you got a Lambo or something, that plate makes sense, right? Like, I own this thing outright.
Yeah.
I don't owe nobody, but a $1,700 car, like, that doesn't even exist anymore, $1,700 car.
And just think, they're actually paying extra for the vanity plate.
Yes, another $50.
Which kind of even kills the vibe of it.
It's a giant percentage of that car's entire value is $50 for the
vanity plate.
Maybe they meant that's what they paid in full for, was the vanity plate.
No, there was no lien on the Mercedes. It was free and clear. Definitely free and clear. Anyway, back to you, Jay. So the previous autonomous record held by Alex Roy was 55 hours
even.
97 and change percent autonomy. Estimated. Right. Best guess. So, beating it meant, what did you do it in?
Well, I did it in 43 hours and 18 minutes.
Okay.
And 98.4% autonomous.
Right. So, you did not really exceed the speed limit. This is a fully legal run, right, or at least your average.
I didn't even beat the Google Maps time for this run.
I know. So. I know. But you did it 98.6%, 0.4% autonomous. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the average temperature of a human body, or is that 98.6?
That's 98.6.
Okay. So close. I'm not going to make that analogy.
Nope. Let's not go there.
Dumb. I was
moving on.
Well, you got to say what? Go on, Doug.
We could talk about the autonomous record like an old boy band album. It's 98% and rising.
98 degrees. Oh,
yes.
Anyway, there you go. All right.
You're welcome, everybody. That's why you come here.
But a big issue was, how do I prove that number?
Okay.
How do I prove the percentage of autonomy? And so I reached out to the software developers of the system I use and said, hey, is there any way you can write coding to give me the percentage of autonomy number? And they was like, well, why do you want that? What do you want me to do? And I didn't exactly want to tell them I'm doing a cannonball.
School project.
Right. Interesting note on their Reddit page, after I broke the record and mentioned that, someone says, oh, I could have coded that in just a couple of minutes. I'm like, well, why didn't you do it 6 months ago when I asked you about it, if it was that easy? But moving on, so I come up with a rather crude method to prove it. I wrapped my steering wheel in electrically conductive tape, and then I wore a little jacket that I made with electrically conductive gloves. It was connected to a power supply and had a cumulative timer on the dash that every time you touched the steering wheel, it logged the amount of time you touched it. Now, this timer had a resolution of 1/10,000th of a second, so you couldn't cheat it. I could sit there and just, like, rapidly hit the steering wheel, and after 4 or 5 times, it would add a second.
Hmm.
You know, so there was no way to cheat the system at all. And so over...
Did Gypsy wear the same straight jacket?
I made two of the... I actually made 3 of those jackets. But so we'll get to the third one later. But yes, we each had...
Third one for your dog?
No. The third one for my co-driver for a run a few days later.
Okay.
So...
Oh, boy.
Yes. Yeah. But wait, there's more.
Okay. So you have a logger of every time you touch the steering wheel. Right. What about the pedals?
And so, no, nothing on the pedals.
Okay.
And so, didn't log that. But, yeah. So, over 43-hour drive,
Did you ever touch the pedals when you didn't touch the steering wheel?
Okay. Well, when you hit the brake. When you hit the brake. Yeah. So.
So there could be some nuance and difference in the 98.4%. It's not 100% scientific. If you log the times you touched a brake,
yeah, but didn't touch a steering wheel. That's true. That's fair. But I thought they had more data than the predecessor had.
Sure. So, I'm not here to poke holes.
No, I appreciate the poking holes.
I'm curious. Cause, you know,
but over the 43-hour and 18-minute drive, we touched the steering wheel for a grand total of 39 minutes.
Nice.
That was it.
Nice.
That is wild.
Yes. Now, did you also do this run nonstop, or did you stop for gas?
We had to stop for gas.
You had your wife in the passenger seat instead of a gas tank.
Right, and she drove the car herself, so we made driver changes.
That's right.
And bathroom stops and gas stops and everything else. There was one time, accidentally, my wife wasn't even in the car.
I'm sorry, what?
Yes.
Are you guys still together?
Yeah, no. while on a cannonball run at a gas stop, I left the gas station without my co-driver in the car. I accidentally left my wife at the gas station.
Yikes.
On a fuel stop.
Why? How? did you not notice she wasn't in the passenger seat?
No, I did not. Because I removed...
Are you so used to doing these runs solo that you just...
That could have been that, but no. Oh, I took the back seats out and had a platform in the back with a mattress. So if we needed to, we could stretch out in the back, go to sleep. So pulling in this gas stop, I was cleaning the windshield, filled it up. She went inside. When she come back out, I said, "Hey, did you get the bottle of Gatorade?" A couple hours earlier, I said, "Get a bottle of Gatorade." You guys know I was asking for a bottle of Gatorade. So, and she says,
"The big bottle."
And she says, "No, I forgot it." And I said, "That's okay. We'll get the next stop. We need to go." Well, I also had to use the bathroom. It was dark. It was raining. It was at night. And I noticed these bushes over in front of the car. And I said, "No, we'll get the Gatorade at the next stop. I'm going to use these bushes." She said, "Okay." And she's getting in the back door of the car because she's going to stretch out, take a nap. It's the last thing I saw.
It sounds like her fault.
Well, it's both of ours fault, really. But we're both to blame.
Yeah, it sounds like her fault.
And so I utilized the bush, get back in the car, crank it up, get out on the highway, set the cruise, let go. And my phone mount on the dash, my phone starts ringing, and it's her. She's calling me. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, she's in the back. She must be laying on her phone and butt dialed me. And I turn around and look and go, "Hey, babe, you accidentally..." Oh, gee. As I look back, I realize she's not back there. And I look up, and her's calling me on the phone. So I had to answer the phone, and yes, I know. You're back at the gas station, the truck stop. I'll be there in a few minutes. So it's 4 miles down, exit, loop around, 4 miles back. And she's standing in the parking lot, and she's laughing so hard she's crying. And we both felt equally bad because she said, "Well, the last thing you saw was me getting in the car." But she said when she saw me using the bush, she says, "Oh, I got a minute. I'll go get the Gatorade." So she got out, went in. I didn't see that. So,
honey, I don't need the Gatorade anymore. I got the bush.
Yeah, I got the bush. So, but yeah. So I left my co-driver at a gas stop accidentally on a cannonball run.
Switchcast is brought to you by Celebrity Machines. Celebrity Machines offers more than 250 different screen-accurate license plates as they've appeared in movies and TV shows such as Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, The Fast and the Furious, Breaking Bad, and so many more. Celebrity Machines also makes our dealer insert plates as well as our commemorative 2539 plates from the fastest cannonball run ever. Visit CelebrityMachines.com for more info and use promo code SWITCHCAST to save 25.39% at checkout.
Okay, let's talk about some scams for a minute.
Oh, buddy.
Oh, boy.
I have one. Do you want me to go first, Doug? Because I got one for you.
Yeah. You go.
Okay, coming to you from Facebook, as they normally are.
Let's bring Jay in on this, too. Jay Roberts, our guest. Scaminator is when we find marketplace listings or otherwise and read them off and figure out how we can tell or when we can tell if they're a scam.
Oh, wait. I think
find the angle.
Is this one something that come up in the last couple of days?
I haven't the faintest idea. No, it's not the one that I posted on C2C Express. All right. But that'll... Okay. Oh, wait. Nope. That's the next one.
Spoiler alert.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I don't know what that one is, so it'll be new for me. Okay, so this one, Facebook post starts and says, I just purchased our first Porsche. For my wife, it's her bucket list car, a 2003 911 Carrera Cabriolet from a small used car dealer in Florida via the internet.
That's not a good start.
The magic of the internet.
Florida.
Low miles, great Carfax, etc.
New IMS?
Well. It's a 911 cab in Florida. It's probably not been done.
Flood damage.
It is white, though, which I think is really impressive. A Mark II 996 in white is really rare.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
Was it originally white?
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, I think. Anyway, per the dealer, while the 911 was sitting on his car lot, they accidentally left it unlocked one night 2 weeks ago, and thieves allegedly stole the Frunk Bose amplifier, the dash AC controller unit, and the complete soft top hydraulic assembly, which includes the motor/pump, the bracket, and both hydraulic ram cylinders. So, like, the entire top, operation gone, which is where these are most expensive.
So those take, like, 5 minutes to remove?
Oh, my goodness. This would probably take forever.
Yeah, that's what I was... That's like, how did they steal it so quickly?
So, there's an old saying that you know when a used car dealer's lying because their lips are moving.
Hey-o. How do you feel about that,
Doug? Sounds like one of those scenarios.
So the post goes on to say, so the used car dealer lowered our purchase price and told us to purchase used replacement parts that will be easy to reinstall once we get the 911 delivered from the auto transport company. Easy?
No. Convertible tops, Bose, and the hydraulic rams are not easy.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, the AC controller unit, sure, you just kind of plonk it. You got to take some trim off, but you just kind of connect it and plonk
but
it.
But why would they steal the AC control unit and not the stereo head unit?
Yeah,
or
that's
not
true.
The wheels? Or the hard top, the factory hard top that was on the car that they would have had to remove to get to,
you're right,
to the
yeah.
soft
the
top
The seats
stuff?
Are easier to remove than the convertible
the seats,
top.
For heaven's sakes.
Yeah. My goodness.
Like, let's pick and choose.
The airbags, they'd been in and out in 30 seconds, right?
Catalytic converters, come on, just go for those.
Yeah, they're right under the rear bumper.
They're worth more than all those parts they stole combined.
So then they go on to ask any suggestions on where we can look to buy the used replacement parts allegedly stolen. Although what's interesting, is a Bose amplifier, the interior, which was not mentioned previously, so I don't know what's gone from the interior. Dash AC controller unit and the soft top stuff. So these poor folks, at this point, you could send the car back, right? You could, like, refuse delivery.
Well, I contacted the buyer to try to help them out because I knew some people in that area. And it turns out I actually know the brother of the dealer owner.
Oh.
And I sent him an email today to try to get him on the phone to discuss this situation. He never gave me a phone number to call him because I find it highly suspect, and that this dealer's telling any modicum of truth. Like, this sounds like and smells like a whole lot of BS.
It's such specific things.
It's so, like, the work required to take the top stuff out. Like somebody mentioned, I think they're right, is you have to put the soft top up at least partially in order to even access that stuff.
Yeah.
And then how do you get it back down to put the hard top back on? Like, there's just so many logical things that poke a hole in this claim. And then you go to search the dealership out on Google and look at their reviews, and you can look at their reviews here. It's MARA Motor Cars LLC in Newport Richey, and the reviews are abysmal.
Oh yeah,
there
not good.
Are almost as many one stars as there are five stars, and the one stars are all very specific and very bad.
Yeah,
it is. It's like reading Spirit Airlines' old reviews before they got their crap together.
Man, this is no good. Well, I feel so bad because these folks are just out there trying to fulfill a dream with owning a what I think is a fantastic car, and they just get absolutely swindled.
Yeah.
Because who knows what else allegedly swindled. And who knows what else? I was just looking at the photo of the car. This, like, bugs me to no end. It needs engine mounts. All of these 996s I see for sale have their tailpipes just pointed straight at the ground, mm-hmm. and nobody ever seems to replace them.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I've got one for you.
Yes.
I was also on Marketplace. Our documentary producer actually sent me this one asking about a 1968 Plymouth GTX.
Okay.
That was for sale, claiming that it had run in three different cannonballs.
I saw that, and it was very specific on the years. It said it had run in the 1970 cannonball.
Yeah, the 70, 72, and 81. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a red flag. There was no 70 or 81 cannonball.
Well, that you know about, apparently.
Yes, you're correct.
Allegedly.
I didn't. So, I said no disappointments,
well,
clean
the
and straight.
Well, the US Express, 81.
1969. Well, shoot, it says 1968 Plymouth Roadrunner, but then he says 1969 440 horsepower. So he doesn't even know what the heck year it is. So I messaged this guy, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. Oh, the other great thing is in the listing photos, so he's talking about the Cannonball Run, the actual race, he then has a picture of the movie poster from the Gumball Rally.
Right.
Ooh.
So he can't even get, like, is fact straight right out of the gate. So I emailed him, messaged him, and said, "Hi, Tommy. Can you shed more light on the Cannonball Run claims?" Do you know what his response was?
Hit me.
"Race ready."
That's it?
That's it.
"Race ready."
That's all of it, quote unquote.
Is that... Okay.
I said, "Well, what does that mean?" I feel like I should don the curmudgeon voice for this guy, because he totally is.
"Race ready, Hank.
It's ready to be entered in the race, Red Ball Garage in Manhattan. I think it's $50 to enter, but the betting is in the 100K.
What is he talking about?
I don't have a clue.
I've never paid $50 since a Red Ball. The car has run 3X, never a win, but a ton of fun.
Is this some, like down, like, illegal street racing car that's got, like, a bunch of almost cred?
Yeah.
This
None
is
of
wild.
Us know.
It's so weird.
What is
And,
this?
Like, why would you even make this up if you can't? Because the only people that would really be looking for it are people who would know that you're lying.
Right.
Or that they just think it's cool, and they're like, "Oh, that's awesome." So I'm not going to recount the whole conversation. It was nuts. But I asked him what makes it ready to run a cannonball, and he said, "Do you see the motor picks?"
He didn't include any picks.
"Does it have a fuel cell?" And he goes, "What part of race ready don't you understand?"
Oh, there it is. The heat.
And so I said, "Well, apparently a lot. I thought to run cannonball, you need, like, fuel cell and countermeasures and all sorts of stuff like that." And he goes, "Well, it depends on what roads you take. My dad ran at night because it's cooler and went down through Yuma, then up. Average speed, 113.
Down through Yuma. Yuma where?
Arizona. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense on the original runs. And then he said... having well-built motors important. Average speed to win it is in the 90s all the way from coast to coast. So I said, "Well, wait a minute. I thought you said you average 113 miles an hour." And he goes, "Well, if you want to win the race, 114.3 was the last winner's speed." I said, "Okay, when was the last race? What car won?" He said, "The car is set up to win if you're manly enough. What? You don't have Google? Buy the book. It explains it all." So
what
I sent
book?
Him a, I sent him a picture of a Cannonball book because I was looking up. I'm like, there's not a single Plymouth ever to run in any Cannonballs of all 4 years. And I looked up the guy's last name. There was no Carrolls ever to run in Cannonball. So I started calling him out on, like, the actual facts and poking holes. And I'm like, "Dude, you're nuts. And, like, you're contradicting yourself and all that." So he said, "I don't know what you're reading." And then he sent me this quote, right? So he's told me to stop, you know, like, using the internet. And then he sends me a direct copy and paste from the internet about my run that isn't even correct because it conflated two different facts from two different runs.
Wow.
So he's sending me information about my run that's wrong, that he looked up on the internet, and then tells me to stop using Google and get my facts straight. This guy was awesome.
Because the internets are never wrong.
And I kept asking him, like, okay, who was the driver? Like, who told you this? And he couldn't answer me. I'm like, well, your family owned the car since new, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So your dad ran it. And then he keep deflecting and deflecting. And he said, well, I was six when this was going on. I was like, okay. So it finally ended with, you know, I asked about somebody, Brock Yates, and he's like, I don't know the name Yates. I'm like, well, he created the cannibal. Yes. You probably should. So then he says, I told him if it ran a cannonball, I would be interested. And he said, well, that's easy for you to say. If I'm wrong, no one loses. If I'm right, someone gains. Some reasoning of a great run. I was like, well, that's like saying my car is matching numbers with absolutely no basis and say, well, if I'm wrong, nobody loses.
Right.
It's original paint. Yeah. Oh, it's man. It's a Hemi. It's a big block. If I'm wrong, nobody loses. Yeah. Oh, okay. No. Yeah.
It's got the matching numbers windshield with it. Nobody loses. Didn't we have somebody say that a few weeks ago?
Yeah, it was on the Chrysler Crossfire.
Oh, that's
with the
right.
Pair,
yes.
The pair.
Man, Jay's got better memory than I do. I hope I don't get out of a job.
I see you're a pro, he says. Was a different game in the 70s. Now you're running 800-plus ponies on pump gas. I said, how would you know? You were 6 years old.
Spicy Doug.
Way to get him.
Ethan, you just like it when we fight. You're like, get him. Come on.
He finally finishes with, you're just effing with me like all liberal theater. Sorry. You're just effing with me like all liberal theater. Focus on the road at high speeds. Everyone else is on their cell phones. Better slow before you give yourself a nosebleed.
How are you? What?
Exactly.
He thought he really got you with that line.
Apparently.
Guaranteed the phone got put down in a huff after he sent that.
He was proud.
He's trying to use the cannonball provenance to sell a car, claiming it ran in the 1970 run, which never existed.
And that it's ready to go race now because it's got a built motor.
It's race ready.
Race ready. It'll average 113, but to win it, you have to be in the 90s.
But what was he talking about? The betting can get up to 100,000?
Oh, that was great, yeah. It's 50 bucks to enter.
Have you ever won any cannonball bets?
I've never gotten a dime for winning. I've never bet.
No, same.
Is there side betting?
Never even heard of that.
Go online to whatever those websites are.
Maybe we should make arrangements with FanDuel for the next event.
Right, there you go.
Other sponsorship opportunities.
Fan and ball.
We're missing out.
Yeah, get him in here. Sponsor Switchcast.
Anyway, I had a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of fun with that one. I just, people, back up your claims, people.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, not telling anyone anything they don't already know. Okay, back to your autonomous cannonball, because that's way more fun than trolling people on the internet. Okay, why did you do this? Genuine question, because I like going fast across the country and driving and being in control. This is the opposite. You're going slow and not driving and sitting there.
But I wasn't going as slow as the car that I beat.
True.
And that was kind of my motivation is, you know, I'm not anti-EV. Don't get me wrong. But I knew that my Prius, my beloved Prius, could better a Tesla in the same playing field. And that's exactly what I did.
All right. It would have been sweet if you had beat the EV wreck time at the same time. You were very close.
I was. There was a horrible accident in Texas that led to a two-hour delay. 1 hour we drove 1 mile. And the next hour we only drove 7 miles. And, you know, we would have beaten, if it wasn't for that, we would have beaten the 42:17 EV record. You know, missed that by 1 hour and 1 minute. Little bummed about that, but, you know.
Did the AI start to get angry when it was stuck in traffic?
That's when it shines, believe it or not. I mean, we sit there for 30 minutes and did not move. And What was funny, after about 10 minutes, the system would flash and it would shut off. And we'd have to hit the brake and re-engage the cruise control and let off.
Hmm.
And that's the first time I've seen it. If you're sitting there, stopped, not moving with an engage, no foot on the brake, no foot on the gas, no nothing, about 10 minutes, it starts screaming at you and it disengages. Which is very interesting. That's what I also found out when that was going on. If you open the door, it'll disengage. If you open the door of the car, it'll do the same thing. It'll scream.
So you can't do like the movie roll out of the driver's seat, bail, and it'll keep going.
Right. If you remove the seatbelt while it's engaged, it says driver not detected, and it will disengage.
Hmm.
Has a camera on the system that's focused on the driver, and like you're mind lost. You go, oh, look at the pretty whatever off on the side of the road. And you stare at it too long, it'll alert, say, driver, pay attention. It'll warn you.
Hmm. Did the AI company you used ban you from ever purchasing it again? You mentioned that they had posted on multiple forums, Reddit, whatever.
Yes.
That
when I was studying it before I engaged the system, if you typed in the search word cannonball, it led you, the few threads that it led you to, people asked, hey, I want to get this system and do a cannonball run. And the moderators of that group says, no, we will ban you from our server. We will ban you from using our system if you even discuss a cannonball.
So are you blacklisted?
That's what's funny. I'm not. Because I guess in their mind, they was picturing people going, you know, not 175 miles an hour, allegedly.
Right.
Doing crazy speeds, and that wasn't my goal. So after the news article come out on Gear Junkie, I reached out privately to one of the moderators and said, hey, I'd like to post the story, tell about it, but I don't want to get banned. And the moderator said, well, if you don't post it, I will. And I posted it, and what's funny, like, what we're finding out with so many things, Cannonball, two people actually cared.
Me and you.
Yes. You know, two people actually cared. And that's when, and one of those two said, when they, after they read the article, said, well, you should have asked me. I would have coded that into the software. It only took me a couple of minutes. And I'm like, well, I asked here in the open forum in the group, and you didn't offer the end. And that, yeah, was.
It's the same people that say, like, oh, I could have done a cannonball in 20 hours, but.
Yeah.
But right. You didn't.
You didn't.
Yeah. Or I just, I'll use mobile refueling and a Porsche Turbo. Okay.
Yeah.
Go do it. Yeah. Everybody's an expert behind a keyboard.
But a few days after that run, I did the Dog Beach, San Diego to Jacksonville, Florida, nonstop, autonomous, semi-autonomous, use the correct term. With Mason Dibley as my co-driver.
Very cool. Very cool.
And that had never been done before on the semi-autonomous. So whatever number we put down, and it was generally a leisurely drive, and Mason and I had fun cracking up, taking turns driving the car, and did it in 33 hours, 97 point some percent autonomous. It was so leisurely, we even stopped at McDonald's one time because I was like, I want a hot meal. So we pulled into a McDonald's and got a meal. I got back in and got out on the road. You know, it was, you know, we knew there wasn't.
Does the AI take you through the drive-thru?
No.
It won't do that?
It won't do that. So
I'm out.
Well, the software is open sourced, and one of the developers actually wrote a program called the Taco Bell program, and he programmed it to drive from his apartment through the drive-thru at Taco Bell back to his apartment. So it can be done since it's open source, and it took him a few months, but he actually successfully pulled it off.
Hmm.
He's getting car started up and punch in the navigation, and it would take him through the drive-thru of his Taco Bell.
If you're not going back home after Taco Bell, though, you keep driving, is it programmed to automatically find a restroom an hour later?
I hope so. Or the nearest, or it has plots waypoints to the nearest Port-a-John rest area, something.
It just brings him up automatically when you pull out of the, like, a geofenced area around the Taco Bell.
Because I can't, The only way I can eat Taco Bell is if I order it and go to the Taco Bell restroom, sit down, take a bite. That's how fast it hits me. So, yeah, Taco Bell's on my do not eat list.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So I managed to set several records in a few days, which was
pretty cool.
And had fun doing it.
Pretty cool. So the big, well, two questions to finish up. One is, what does it take for a run like this to be 100% autonomous?
A lot of technology. The biggest obstacle that I see is how does an autonomous vehicle deal with a manned toll booth?
Okay.
How does it pull up to a toll booth and hand the operator cash?
What if you have an easy pass?
So, but there's still a manned toll booth that has to pull up to and stop at. And
with an easy pass?
With an easy pass, like the Oklahoma ones.
Okay.
All right. And so, you know, how does it deal with that? And what does what's the toll booth operator's reaction, even with the easy pass? How does it?
I mean, I would think with the easy pass, again, that could be a thing like the Taco Bell where you just program it in to go, yeah. This is what an easy pass is. You have to read the thing, easy pass lane, you slow down to 5 miles an hour and you go.
How does it deal with emergency vehicles? How does it deal with a tractor trailer accident where you only drive a mile in an hour? You know, how does it? There's certain things that does require human interaction. Is 100% possible? In theory, yes. But for it to pull off a 2,800-mile drive over Google Maps time, 41, 42 hours with all the possible variables and weather and everything that could happen, that'd be huge if it ever happened. I just don't see it happening.
Do you think we're going to see a 24-hour cannonball or, we'll say, 99.9% autonomy first?
I'd say we'd see a 99% autonomous first because the technology is advancing. It's getting better. I mean, I did it in 98.4, hands, 43 hours, hands-on 39 minutes. I'd have to do some quick math. That'd have been hands-on, let's call it 30 minutes.
Sure.
Not 9 minutes off.
I think if you didn't leave your wife, maybe that time you had to navigate around turn to get back on the highway and back.
Yeah.
I think it'd be interesting to compare maybe three different metrics, right? So the EVs are going after not only time, but the least amount of time charging. That's kind of their proving of the technology and the infrastructure of the charging network. We don't really care about this metric other than it affects our overall time. But in a regular cannonball, we look at total stop time.
Right.
I don't know if this is a record, but on our 2725 run, our total stop time was 22 minutes across the whole country, which is probably the least amount of stop time for anybody, if not very close.
My total stop time on my nonstop run was 9 minutes. That was one for an interaction with law enforcement and wants to clean the windshield.
You're right. So I guess then the metric would be like, okay, charging time versus, which is way behind. Let's just talk about stop time versus hands-on time on an autonomous, like which one gets to like 1 minute or 5 minutes first, right? The race to the least amount of time. Because you're at 39 minutes with yours, 9 minutes stop. So you're 30-minute gap there. So autonomy has a long way to go.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
And as the technology advances, it'll only get better, as we've seen in the overall history of Cannonball. You know, the first runs in 1903 took 50 days. 10 years later, they were down to how many hours? 50 hours?
30 years later, they were down to 50 hours. But 10 years later, they were down to just a couple days.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the technology is advancing, just like the pioneers that did it in the early 1900s. We're going to see that in the future.
Hmm.
It'll get better.
Yeah. Quickly, and then we'll go to the props and flops. What significance does this type of run, like you're proving something, just like the early transcontinental mm-hmm. runs proved certain things about the automotive industry and capabilities of the automobile then. What significance do you think this type of run has in the overall scope of the automotive landscape?
That there can be a safe adaptation of semi-autonomous systems and a human driver in cars. That it can be done and combined safely and done well.
Cool. Well, thank you, Jay. Let's go to the props and flops of the week. And to find out more about Jay's runs, where can they see more stuff? The VinWiki, probably?
The VinWiki will be coming soon.
Yep.
Sitting in the chair next week.
And then social media?
And social media, Instagram at GonzoPrius.
Sounds good. Sweet. Always good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars. And for those of you watching live, if you have questions for Jay, stick around. We will do a bonus round of Q&A afterwards with your live questions. So don't leave us just yet.
And the props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars, as always. Switch Cars is the enthusiast's dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com. And our pick of the week from Switch Cars inventory is what this week, Doug?
Well, Jay picked this one as he was walking around the showroom. He fell in love with a Guards Red 1986 911 Carrera Cabriolet. Five-speed nice. Manual, 85,000 miles, some good service history on it, and a nice driver. Price was just reduced today to $54,980. And, of course, if you mention discount code SWITCHCAST, you'll get another $1,000 off. Our flop of the week is a receipt we saw posted of a replacement quote for the Mercedes McLaren SLR brakes. Now, the SLR is notorious for being quite expensive to maintain, but a dealer quote for replacement brakes leaked onto the internet from Mercedes-Benz of Knoxville, is where the estimate came from. It was a whopping $112,000 for rotors and pads. Not including tax or labor.
Were these the McLaren gold sprinkled brakes?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
However, someone goofed on the quote, or they're trying to rip the customer off or create sensationalism for the internet because they quote the front price for the rears, which greatly increase the quote. So yes, the fronts are a ridiculous $26,000 per corner just for the rotors.
Oh, what are
For the rotors, but the rears are a measly $3,000.
What are they made out of?
Carbon ceramic.
There is
yeah. But they quoted 26 for all, you know, each corner. So that jacked up the quote. And in doing some digging online, I did find the fronts new for $19,000 each. So let's be clear, that's still more than an entire set of ceramic brakes and pads for a Porsche GT3 RS.
Did I just hear Hank have a heart attack?
That's more than I paid for my Corvette.
Probably more than he paid for his house.
Yeah, because he bought it in 1978. Anyway, so before you buy into the exotic car hacks mantra that you don't have to worry about maintenance costs and you can own exotic cars for free, well, don't own an SLR long enough to have to replace brakes. Our prop of the week is a submission from one of our regular listeners. That's Mom. Side note, she did not vouch for my cannonball.
She didn't get a notarized document?
No, okay. And in an attempt to shield her from anxiety, I didn't even send her a Glimpse link on our first run, but I sent it to my sister. And then halfway through, I get a text from my mom like, hey, what the heck? I want a link. I want to watch your run. But no, she did not. She was not the official witness. Via thedrive.com, Miami police got a Rolls-Royce Ghost police car. Now, before you get your panties all in a wad about civil asset forfeiture and stuff like that, it's on loan from Bremen Motor Cars, who is footing the bill for maintenance. And it's a 2012, which means it's really not that big of a deal from them. They wholesale around 85, 90 grand, which is like less than two Tahoe PPVs. So they're primarily using it from promotion and recruitment. They probably just wrapped it in the police getup, and they take it around to events and schools and things and try to sucker people into becoming police officers.
Does this have the W12 in it?
The Ghost in 2012, I think it could have that or a V8. Or was it 2013 they came out with a V8? I don't remember. 12? Yeah. Yeah.
That's a fun pursuit vehicle.
Yeah, but they're not even using it for that.
Just show card.
I mean, it would be really comfortable if you got arrested and put in the back seat.
Hey, could you put the ottoman out, the power ottoman out?
Where's my wireless headphones?
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you all for being with us tonight. Again, stick around, those of you who are with us live, and get your questions in for Jay. Thank you again for Jay being here. Thank you to Tyler Sanders and Ethan Huffnagel for producing and being a part of the show tonight. Our sponsors, Boxcast, Nuts for Sticks, Switch Cars, Celebrity Machines, Parallel Printworks, and Stephen Holm Woodworking. Our bumper music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. This episode will be available next Monday in audio format wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week at 8 p.m. as we look forward to edifying, educating, and entertaining you on the drive of your life.